it had space, but it was kind of like, okay, how do we turn the space and make it feel like a place?
Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show is about commercial art, making a good living, and making great art. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza! you can find my work at andyj.pizza. It's illustration work, if you didn't know. You can also follow me and keep up with the podcast on Instagram at andyjpizza. Big shout out to our syndicate, Illustration Age. You can find this show at illustrationage.com/creativepeptalk. Let's get into this episode. This episode is sponsored by AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a professional graphics tablet for your Mac. It works with any Mac app, so you can use creative tools like Photoshop and Illustrator right on your iPad. Check out astropad.com to learn more. Yo, today on the show, we have a phenomenal guest episode. This is such an honor and a privilege to share with you Kate Bingham-Burt. Kate is one of my favorite people in the universe and one of my biggest influences. She's been an influence of mine since I graduated college. When I first discovered her work and all of her projects, they were one of the biggest inspirations for me to start doing a lot of self-generated work, which ended up making my career. So I owe so much to Kate. She is a beacon of creative wisdom and energy and positivity and just all the good things that there are. Kate is such a creative soul. I love her illustration. I love her ideas. I feel like it's just been amazing to watch. I've been watching her career unfold over the past 8 years, and things just get better and better. Like, and I'm just loving every second of it. I feel like the last chapters in her illustration have just, I don't know. They just get better and better, and I'm just loving every second of it. I had a phenomenal time having a long chat with Kate, and I learned a lot, and I left this conversation feeling on fire. I know that you're going to as well. Without further ado, here is Kate Bingham-Burt. Still only using it for like drawing textures and adding like slightly, I don't know, just different effects, but I wouldn't draw on it. And it wasn't until I moved to the iPad like 3 or 4 months ago that I started making all of my work in Photoshop, drawing with the pencil on the iPad. I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, I feel like I have a lot more control when I'm drawing on the iPad.
No, totally. Totally. I don't know. I'm excited to kind of explore a little bit more. But I've been really happy with it so far. And I really like the way that they play together too. I like drawing on the iPad and then just like zooming it to Illustrator and then really essentially all I've done is for some freelance work, like maybe like 30% is where I would just draw. I've cut out the scanning part because I do all my drawing on tracing paper, and then I scan it in, and then I vectorize it, yada yada yada. This is just like I've cut out the scanning and the vectorizing part, and it actually saves so much time. But however, I kind of looked forward to scanning in piles and piles of tracing paper, because then I could just like zone out and watch TV or something like that. So it's, I don't know, am I winning or am I really losing?
Cheating yourself of this good TV time.
Cheating myself of watching yet another episode of Law and Order SVU. I don't know.
Is that the same, what do you call those TV shows?
White noise
TV shows. Is that the same thing you've been watching for like ages and ages?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I blame my mom for instilling a real love in all things crime TV.
That's funny. So,
yeah.
I find that, here's my problem, right? Is that I feel like during the day when I'm doing creative work, I feel like my brain is really switched on. I feel like there's a lot of like surprise that goes into every week where it like keeps me on my toes, to where at night now, I don't want to watch new TV. I don't want to feed my brain more surprise. I want to feed it certainty. And so just relax. So I've watched The Office like 18 times.
No, it's true. It's like, it's the same. Cause I watch most of my TV at night. Cause like actually during the day, I'm working, I'm a little bit more alert, I'm listening to music or I'm listening to podcasts or something like that. But then at night, it's just like, okay, where's my comfort TV? Yes, it's like comfort food. Where's my comfort TV?
Yeah. And just turn your brain off. And I need that. And I feel bad though, because I don't know anything about what's going on in the world of entertainment. And everybody's, I'm always missing out on all these conversations people are talking about. What these new shows? I don't watch
any
of them.
That's okay, Andy. It's okay. I bet you would do really, really good at like an office bar trivia night.
I would be excellent. I would destroy that. I know, and Seinfeld. I've done that with Seinfeld. But
Just hold tight to that. Just get really, really, really good at those two shows, and that's all you really need.
Double down.
Don't worry about it.
Good idea.
Don't worry about it.
So
how's it going, Andy?
Oh man, it's going really well. You know, I think what's annoying is like January. I don't know what it's like for you, but January for me is always slow, and it's always like you're getting your stuff together. Everything's kind of getting moving, and I think for whatever reason, I'm in that like excited planning mode, dreaming, brainstorming. So I start a bunch of new things, but by the time February hits, you have like 85,000 requests on your time.
Yeah.
And now it's February and I'm just panicking. So this week looks nuts. So I don't know. But are you on sabbatical now?
I am. I actually just, when you were talking about what your January looked like, my first day of sabbatical was January 7th.
Yeah.
And so it's been incredibly busy. It's just January was a really strange month. I think between not being at school anymore, basically not having a school schedule for the first time in 15 years, being full-time in my studio, being really, really busy with that, basically any place where there was a hold for school stuff, I filled it with other stuff. And then just with the election, and I went to DC, and so then you would just have that. It was a bit crazy. It's crazy.
Oh,
so
don't say these trigger words. You're starting on the wrong foot. We can't go there right now.
I know, but I'm it's weird. I had to go back into school. This was towards the end of January. I think it was January 23rd or 24th. I had to do a few classroom observations.
Yeah.
And at first I was kind of dreading, where I'm like, oh, I have to go back to school. This is going to be weird. I haven't been there in a couple weeks. And but I was really, 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 really happy to, like, I stumbled upon some of my students, and it was just so much fun. And I was like, whoa, I really miss this. I haven't been gone that long. No, but I think it was, I was in my studio and I was just kind of just, it was 1 week where I couldn't stop looking at Twitter and Facebook, and I was just like, oh, and I wasn't able to really like, I wasn't able to talk to really anyone about it. I wasn't able to process. I think I probably ended up yelling at Jason about something. I have no idea. But But then I went into school and I like was like, oh, this is something that's very known to me. And I had some like really good conversations with students.
You saw people face to face.
I saw people and had like really, yeah, it was great. And I think I kind of understand a little bit more with some of the adjuncts that I work with at Portland State who are like full-time freelance designers. One of the reasons why they probably, why they like teaching is that it like gets them out of the studio yes. and them talking to people and seeing people. And again, it's so pathetic. Like I have only been on sabbatical for like a couple weeks and yeah. I was just like basically close to losing my mind.
I'll tell you something more pathetic than that. I was looking at getting a desk at this print shop locally and I went and I worked for, I worked from 9 a.m. to 12 to noon. And then I was like, felt like I was going to start crying because, because I was missing my children. Like I, and I never in a million years did I think that I always kind of thought eventually I'm going to get a space outside the house and I'll go do that thing. And, you know, it'll give me some work life separation. And actually as soon as I was there, it was just this crystallization of, I don't want work-life balance. I yeah. want it to be I want it to be my life. And actually,
no, I know. So. And I think that was the little, I totally get it. Cause I, you know, you have those, like, I always have these fantasies where I'm like, what would it be like if I didn't have school? Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, I actually really, I like having it be crazy all the time. And yes. I like all of the people that I am around all the time. And I love seeing these faces and I really enjoy the people I work with. And I know it makes it super like even more hectic, but I actually really like it. And mm-hmm. like these kids kind of like give me life. And so, yeah,
I think it's kind of like, this idea that if you're an introvert or an extrovert, I think a lot of people think that means you either want to be alone all the time or you want to be with people all the time. And I think the truth is it's like sleep, to where if you get too much sleep, you feel tired. And the same goes for like, if you get your energy by being alone, then once you've been alone for a while, you start to get restless and you need to spend that energy.
Yeah,
and I think you need to take from, you know, it's, we always dream about, I wish I could just do creativity all the time.
No.
And it's like, but then you have no experiences to draw on, not, you know, no new input. And it's
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You need to have like this, like everyone has their own secret mixture of things that makes it work for them. And,
yes.
you know, you might not be completely aware of like what your recipe is. And so like an ingredient's gone and you're like, oh shit, I need that.
and that's kind of what you were recognizing, like coming back into that school, you were recognizing like, oh, these conversations are part of my
yeah.
fuel and seeing people and all that stuff.
Yeah. And I think over the years, I feel like, I mean, I've been teaching for 15 years and I feel like school feeds my creative work. I
yeah.
feel like I want to be a better, you know, illustrator for my students. I want to make like, it's just like this weird, crazy like Mobius strip loop thing that's like it all just kind of runs into each other and like
yeah.
when a section of it gets gone it's like whoa, what's happening? But I'm also very I'm very okay with having a little bit of a break from school until October or so that's good too.
It sounds it'll really refuel your passion and interest and you'll come back with a different perspective.
I think so because I think it's good. I think I probably got a little bit too school saturated and you know you just need to kind of refigure the way that you're doing things in order for you to continue to do those things.
Yeah.
And
so, probably prune some old practices and
yeah.
just all that kind of stuff. Do you
yeah.
what have you been doing? Have you been in like planning phase, discovery mode, that kind of stuff? For the sabbatical year, what's your plan?
I actually, this month of, so I'm opening up a new space in Portland.
Is this outlet?
Yes, it is.
It looks so awesome. I saw like one photo and I was
Thank
like,
you.
Got chills. Yeah.
I get to pick paint colors soon. I'm so excited. But yeah, so that actually was supposed to be ready to go by December, but there's been like, it's just been slow. We had a couple weird snowstorms here, so construction got screwy, and then there's like whatever, building permits, yada, yada, yada. The whole place isn't going to be ready until mid-March. So I've just kind of been like saying yes to like all of the jobs basically, because I'm kind of like, okay, I want to take whatever money that I'm making from these freelance jobs, I want to put it towards this new space, and I'm just kind of basically have my head down drawing and working, and also making plans for the space when it opens too. And
so what is that going to look like? Like, what's the space going to be?
So it's not that big. It's like 650 square feet.
Yeah.
Whenever
anybody starts saying numbers, my brain literally turns off, and it's not a good thing. It's terrible, but especially square feet. I'm like, I have no reference point. It's like 650. Am I already like my brain turned off? Sorry. But I have friends that like love building houses and doing stuff like that. And they're telling me all these numbers, and I'm like, I want to see it, but I can't picture that.
I'm one of those nerds. I love space.
Yeah.
I love like figuring out spaces. I like figuring out where unused spaces are. I do this at school a lot too, where I'm like, wait, that room's not being used. Let's take it over and turn it into something else. Like, I'm like always
that physical
just kind of
space, like world building environment. Yeah. I know these people that I think that's a certain type of energy that, I really appreciate it and love it, but I feel like my world is all internal, and I'm more interested in building. This is ridiculous, but building the worlds in my mind or something. I don't want to actually do it. I don't know.
No, I seriously, if this were a podcast where you talked about like, what could we do with that weird room? I could talk about it for like 3 hours. It would be the most boring thing, but I absolutely love it.
And so
I
think go ahead.
So this space is going to be part my illustration studio, part like design and zine library, part workshop space, part weird kind of like retail pop-up space. It's going to be a lot like, so the upstairs, I'm building a mezzanine where my illustration life is going to live. And then downstairs is going to be me just basically experimenting in public with concepts surrounding retail, community programming, just what happens. It's going to be in this compound, basically, that's going to have a couple other design studios there. And then there's like this woman that builds surfboards. And then there's this person that makes cakes. And it's just going to be, there's a bunch of really great kind of neighbors, too. And we all of our spaces have these glass garage doors that open up into a courtyard. And so we've got this really nice shared courtyard, too.
So wait, are you building this from scratch?
Well, so long story short, the developer / landlord, his name's Kevin Cavanaugh, and he is really, really, really excellent here in Portland for, again, this, I'm going to talk about space again, but for finding...
I wasn't trying to shut you down. Like, don't start with the square feet. I was just letting you know. I need something more like, how many above ground pools could it fit? Like that kind of... I can envision that, but even like people say, it's like a football field. I'm like, I don't know football.
You're like, I have no idea. Yeah. I have no idea. But so Kevin is really good about finding, again, either space that needs to be developed or underutilized space. And then he's really good about finding really interesting and excellent tenants and turning it into just a different kind of like building experience. And he actually was my landlord when I first moved here to Portland, and I lived in one of his spaces for like 7 years before we bought a house. And he's turned into a good friend too. And so when he was developing this space, he contacted me and he was like, I've got this weird space and I think you'd really like it, because I also really like weird spaces too. Right. So
just spaces in general.
Yeah, just spaces in general. I don't know. I just think, I think like the idea of being able, what I get really excited about is like turning just a space and then making it into a place, you know? Right. And yes, I feel like
character and
absolutely. And, yeah. Absolutely. Cause I feel like that was like, it's like a big thing that I like doing at Portland State.
Yeah.
Cause when I first started there, 9 years ago or whatever, it was hard because it's like the graphic design program was all over the place. The art program was in 5 different buildings. Mm. It had space, but it was kind of like, okay, how do we turn the space and make it feel like a place?
Dudes, listen, if you haven't already, if you're someone who likes to make visual art of any kind, get on AstroPad. AstroPad is fantastic. I have lots of friends that have got hooked on it. They're making all of their stuff on their iPad using the AstroPad app connected to their Mac, drawing in Photoshop, working in Illustrator. Honestly, it is a massive breakthrough in our field, and you need to go check it out. Go check it out at astropad.com. Thanks, AstroPad. So, all right, so you're talking about space versus place. And you're talking about making sure the students have a designated place to work. I was wondering, like, is that from your own personal experience? Like, was
that it?
Where did that start?
Any of the things that I like even remotely like try to give as advice always comes from just from my own experience. And I'm just not, you know, it might not work for everyone, but it works for me. So I try to like, you know, share those experiences as much as I possibly can. But I guess I would think back to just the role models that I have in my life. Like my the very first kind of like workspace I ever was exposed to was really probably my parents, because I grew up and they were weavers and they had their own studio and they had their own space. And I thought that was really cool. But then they also had a studio that was also in our house too. So they had like kind of multiple places to work.
Yeah.
And then my grandmother she was an illustrator and she had, this really amazing basement studio that I was just kind of just intoxicated with. I was just totally kid drunk on how awesome it was. Just to like see how she had like all of her drawing supplies were out and her walls were covered. And I've always been a big fan of just like covering any sort of white space with things that I want to be looking at.
I've seen your studios and they always have that trait. That's true. I've pinned them on Pinterest several times because I just love like you're being caved in by all of this inspiration.
And it's not for everyone, and I fully understand that. I mean, I think it's, I definitely like being in spaces that make me feel like I'm like in a cave of stuff. Yeah. But I do. I think it's important to have like your workstation set up and to have your workstations ready to go, and for it not to be a hurdle for you to make things too, you know. It's like, oh, you have an idea, you want to do something, but you're like, you know,
like
my
eliminating
stuff
all possible friction.
Absolutely. Like when I lived in Mississippi and I had more space, I actually, oh my goodness, the school had a couple studios for me. Like I basically turned, the artist Donald Judd, who with Marfa and everything like that, he basically had tons of different studios and different project tables for all different ways of making and thinking. Cause I mean, he's in Marfa, he owns a town, and he was able to have that luxury of just having,
that's what happens when you own a town.
Exactly. When I lived in Mississippi, I had a studio that was just for sewing. I had a studio that was just for testing out installation ideas. I had a studio that was for my just like, you know, just for graphic design drawing work. And then I had a studio that was like my messy studio. It was ridiculous. Yeah, and Mississippi State was a land grant university. So space was like something that they had plenty of.
Yeah.
And they also had a ton of kind of buildings that no one was using. And as we learned earlier, I love kind of like being like, what is this being used for? Oh, it's not being used for anything. Can I use it? Okay, great. Thanks. And so that's kind of how I talked my way into having like these multiple spaces. But
people like your friends are like, don't show you the rooms that they're not using currently because you'll like divide and conquer. True. Like, oh, what are you doing with that back room over there?
It's true. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, this isn't for me, but maybe you could be utilizing it in a very different way that could be more productive for you. I love that stuff. I really do. But
other than like being frictionless, because I think obviously I can totally relate, like the times that, like right now I'm redoing a bunch of my space and cleaning everything out and, you know, starting afresh. And so I'm in that space of setting up wherever, because I just got mobile using the iPad and the MacBook Pro. And so I can go anywhere. And there's part of that that's great. The other part of it is you always have an excuse not to get it all out and go deep.
Exactly. Yeah.
But what about other than friction? What does it do? Like, what does it feel like? You said like you're like kid drunk in this space, but like in your grandma's studio.
Yeah.
What does it do for you? What's the creative magic of creating that sacred environment?
It's I think part of it is also you are taking what it is that you want to do serious enough to create a space for it.
Oh, that's and so I think, true.
I think that's a huge kind of thing to, how do I want to say this? I think that's a big thing for a lot of people to be like, okay, I am actually committed to this and I'm taking this seriously and so serious enough that I am dedicating space to this and I'm gonna make this happen. And I think that's a huge step in the whole process of being creative too, is allowing yourself to be like, yeah, I'm doing this.
Yes.
And I think that level of
investment and commitment, you all of a sudden have to live up to it to a degree.
And I think that goes back to feeling like you're taking ownership over what it is that you want to do with your creative life. And I don't know, like I and a big part of that is being like, okay, this is the area where this stuff is going to happen. Mm. And I think you level up when that happens.
Yes. So. I think that's absolutely true. I've seen that in a bunch of different ways in my own life. Like the more space that I create to do creative stuff, like the more that stuff happens. Like, and I see my, my friend Andrew, who makes all the lights.
I love him. I love him.
Nobody doesn't love him. He's the best. he talks about how he got his lights UL listed and it costs, you know, it's a certain fee. This is like, I don't know, you know, getting them legit, that there's a fee and there's a buy-in that happens that all of a sudden you're invested and now you better live up to the expectation because this is serious and you're really doing it.
Absolutely. Because you're taking that risk. And I feel like even though that is, that might make you nervous, I think that that's a good thing. That's a really good thing, because that when you feel nervous, that means that you are actually progressing and that you're moving forward and that things are happening. I mean, just like with this new space that I'm doing, I'm like, oh my God, I'm kind of terrified with the whole thing, but I'm like, okay, but this is because I feel like this and I know this feeling in the past, like this is actually a good sign. It's a good nervous to have, and that means that I am going to be growing. I'm going to be moving forward. New things are going to come from this, and this is what I really, really want and need right now to happen. So it's, I don't know, like I just like, yeah, I it makes me want to puke sometimes, but it's this is a good thing. It's a good thing, you know, I don't want to always remain like static, I don't want that. And
I actually think like we, you know, I think about this a lot on a bigger scale in terms of America and corporations and stability and security. And I feel like we're so obsessed as Americans about like playing it safe, doing that. Like all parents, obviously, because they love their kids, are telling them like, here's the safe plan. You go to college, you do this thing, you have to have insurance, you have to do da 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 da. And I'm not saying any of those things are bad, but I do think that there's this innate, like as we evolved as humans, we were like being eaten by bears and saber-toothed tigers and all kinds of like crazy stuff. And there's this, the path of adventure, as lame as, you know, us doing drawings and feeling like the fear and the risk in this, like as lame as that might be, I do feel like there's an element of adventure and risk and being unsure that really, really makes you a happier person. If you're
absolutely,
there's a level of fulfillment that you get from that, that you can't get by playing safe all the time.
I 100% agree. And I don't know, like I can always tell when I have been playing it safe because I just kind of, I don't know.
You start to get kind of, you know, that like, you get bored, you get miserable.
And get really cranky and just kind of sick of everything and just not the most fun person to be around, you know?
I'm exactly the same. So that's encouraging to me because I'm doing some things this year that like, I'm, you know, super nervous about. I'm going to plan an event this year, and I am just not an event planner, which means that I might have to partner with somebody else, which makes me uncomfortable because I like to be solo guy making all the decisions and, you know.
I love events. I want to hear more about this whenever you're ready, because that's something that it's terrifying and it's a lot of hard work, and that makes you feel really, 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 kind of nervous, but I love doing events. It's so much fun.
Any tips? Because I'm frightened.
Well, I mean, I think I've been really, really fortunate in being a part of Design Week Portland over these last like 5-6 years. And I think the one big tip that I have for you is to find a partner who is a lot smarter than you, because that's exactly
what are you trying to say about me?
No, I'm saying that Celie Pines here in Portland, she's the founder of Design Week Portland, and she's also the head of Creative Mornings here in Portland. Okay. And I've worked with her. Oh my gosh, I've known her for so many years now, and I've worked with her. I think the way that we hang out is by like making events happen, basically. Yeah. And I love it. I love friendships that are like that, where you're just like, okay, what are we going to do now? But like, I have learned so much. Learned so much from her just by, I love the way she operates in meetings. I love the way that she like gets deals done. And I love the way, there's so many different things that I feel like I've picked up from watching her over the years that I'm just like, she's totally made me a better event planner. She's made me a better like meeting runner. She's made me like just like so much. And I feel like you got to do that with other people. You totally have got to do that with other people, because doing it by yourself is probably terrifying. But I think
and details
finding
to me,
someone else,
details are just like a thing that you put in a large bag. And you don't think about them anymore. That's
same. And I feel like that's why whenever you're like working on a team or you're building a team, you've got to find those people that aren't just like you, but find those people who compliment you. And like, I'm the same way. Like at school, I'm very much like, oh, this is what we need to do. Oh, this is like, oh, wouldn't that be awesome? This would be so great. Let's get everybody excited about it. But then like spreadsheets, screw that.
All
the little things, but I'm definitely like, but then I've got a lot of good people that I work with that are like, let me do these things. Mm. You know, you do your thing, I'll do my thing, and we'll get it done. I'm like, that's beautiful.
That's awesome. That's what I'm talking about. That is good. That's good. Good encouragement, because I'm just getting nervous about the details of going into something as a partnership or with other people. Just even that just seems like overwhelming to me, but I know that I'm not going to be able to pull it off by myself. So I think that's really helpful.
You're being so cryptic, and I love
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I guess I haven't really announced it yet. It's not actually going to be too much longer now. It's just a few months. I'm not going to say anything. Oh gosh.
I love it.
Yeah, after the recording's off, I'll give you like two or three bits. All right.
No, because I'm just like selfishly, I'm like, ooh, I want to talk about this. And maybe we could like figure some stuff out. This would be great.
Oh my gosh. Honestly, it's going to be small first, but down the road, I want it to be, so much more. Anyway, this doesn't mean anything to anybody. And
no,
I'm sure
but you gotta build small though too, because I mean, that's just, we're in the middle of the next design week is going to be end of April of this year. We started our first one was in 2012, and it was really small. And it was essentially like all of these different groups in Portland are doing these awesome things. What if we just aggregated it all into one week and called it Design Week? It was just like so simple and so bare bones and grassroots.
That rose
from there, you know?
That is essential. And actually, like, this is something that is a big personal value of mine, this idea of DIY and starting small. Like, I literally started the podcast recording it onto my iPhone, like walking down the street. And because I kept thinking, like, I want to start a podcast. I thought that since 2010, it took me 4 years to do it. And the reason I didn't do it was because I just kept thinking, then I got to buy a microphone, and then I got to figure out how to do this. Then I got all these things. I'm like, I just can't do it. And so at some point I thought, look, I'm going to start recording on my phone, and it's going to be terrible in the ways that don't count so much.
But you just got to do it. You just got to do it. And I think that's again, like, And I think we can make up excuses. Oh, I don't have the right this or the right that, ways to kind of like talk ourselves out of doing stuff. And I love it that you were just like, okay, I'm going to start talking on my phone.
Which is in some ways a terrible idea, but it worked. And so actually I want to talk to you about zines for a minute in the spirit of DIY. I know, like, I feel like zine culture in the like the visual arts culture, music culture, all that, and then just culture in general, I feel like it ebbs and flows in popularity. Like, you know, zines will be in for a few years and then they'll disappear. But I feel like for you, it's like a core value. It's a thing that sticks with you always in a great way. Like right now, I feel like zines are about to make a giant comeback, because I think everything's become so slick recently. Yeah. Especially designers and illustrators, I feel like they're all manufacturing things now, like on a big level, almost like a corporation. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I personally have this renewed interest in like the DIY, gritty, do-it-yourself kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I can just sense like I'm starting to want to go look at zines and see things that people made in their bedrooms. And but I wanted to ask you, like, because I just know that it's just something that has always been a massive deal to you, I just wanted to know why. What's that all about?
Well, and I've loved the immediacy of zines. I love how they're super democratic. I love how they're so very accessible. And I also really enjoy how you can kind of get an idea out really quick and see if it's going to work or not, if it's something that you want to take to the next level. But I mean, for me, the very first zine that I made, it was over 20 years ago. And it was really kind of the first thing that I ever made and distributed. Like, it was, and so, like, to go even further back, it was when I was in college and I went to school. It was a really tiny liberal arts college in southern Missouri where we were super isolated, and this was still pretty much pre-internet, so I don't know, we were pretty isolated. And I was a English major, and my friend Zach, who is still a really good friend of mine, he was a writer. And I had just started kind of screwing around on the computer. Yeah. And like I think I had taken like a design class at that time.
Yeah.
But he was just I was an English major too, but he really took to it. Like he was just, he was writing all these like crazy, amazing poems. They were just like so good. And we would work side by side with each other because we both had a work study assignment to work in this writing center. And I remember being like, Zach, I said, your poems are so good. You need to, we need to like put them in a book and we need to like share them with other people. Like it was just like, so it, like thinking back about it, I'm just like, this is so ridiculous.
And it's so, so good. Like I feel like those young times where you're like, we're doing amazing stuff that people need to see.
I know.
It's, like, but it's how it gets going. Like that, just that. Yeah. Raw just energy. That,
the whole, yeah. And I'm like, your poems are so good. You should share them with people. And so that's he was awesome. Like, really? And so my first zine was basically me taking his poems and we made a zine. I think it was like, and it was so great because we had this professor, his name's Dr. Carmen, and he was the head of the writing center. And he was just this kind of amazing, transformative person. He was just so important to both mine and Zach's creative development, basically. He let us do whatever we wanted to. And so we had like free access to the photocopier. We would just like drop his name and they would let us do whatever we wanted to on the photocopier. Yeah. And so we made this publication and we distributed it. And that publication, because people really enjoyed it, like we decided that from that publication became we decided that I'm like, Zach, you should read your poems. And then we know these other people who write and they should read. And then I'm like, I've got friends who are, you know, are really good illustrators and designers and friends who like play music. Let's have an event happen. And that was that zine led to the very first event that I ever produced too, which we did like 15 more while I was still at school. But it was like, and then I would make zines for every single one of those events. So it was like publishing my friend's writing, publishing my friend's artwork, publishing my friend's like one act plays and things like that. So it was very much at that those first publications that I made had nothing to do with the work that I was making because I didn't really know what kind of work I was making. I didn't know what I was doing. I did know, however, that I liked what my friends were doing and I knew that I had, at that time, enough know-how to showcase the work that my friends were doing. And so I felt very excited. And I felt not comfortable in sharing my work, but I felt comfortable in creating platforms to share my friends' work. Mm-hmm. And from there came like even more community. And I love that. And I feel like that's where zines started for me. Mm. But it's
so addictive, this idea that you're like, you have, you know, I think about this thing that Steve Jobs said. He says like when he was really young, there was this pivotal moment where he realized everything in our world was made by people. And I feel like there's a thing about zines where it goes from like, I had a stack of loose leaf papers and now I have a book essentially.
Yep.
And now it's a thing. It's an artifact.
It's so, I don't know. And
it's a gateway drug to making stuff.
It really
is.
It is. It's total gateway drug. And I see it whenever I do zine workshops with students that I haven't made publications before. Like I can see it in their faces when they are a little bit suspicious at the beginning of the workshop being like, what are we doing? And at the end, as they've like made their first edition and they're trading with people and they're laughing and they're looking at like what other people have written. And then they're always like, we're going to make more of these. This is so much fun. Like I'm like
your creative potential, like that, that ability to make a thing has been unlocked. And my whole career started making zines too. Like I love it.
It's just, and it's just one of the things I like about the workshops that, cause usually like the workshops I do with zines are usually like 2 to 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And we always like start and finish something in 2 to 3 hours.
It's such a drug for people who are, like me, who like are a procrastinator.
Absolutely.
Don't want to commit to some giant thing. Don't know that I'm going to get sick of it. But if you're like, we're going to make it in 3 hours, then I start to be, then I just slowly from there just started pushing that out to like, maybe I'll make something that'll take a day.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's just, and that's so much like what I focus on in these workshops too. I'm like, we're going to think small and we are going to explore all areas of that one small idea.
That's so
good. Then I'm like, and we've got, you know, we only have an hour and a half left to finish this. So let's go, you know? And it's just, so it's like part cheerleader, part drill sergeant.
That right there, though, the thinking small thing is so massive. And this, man, I love this because I work with creative people all the time. And one of the things that I just get so overwhelmed with navigating is that one of the superpowers of creative people is thinking in possibilities, but it's also like their greatest weakness where they see infinite possibilities.
Oh yeah.
Their ideas are massive ideas. Like, I've got an idea for a graphic novel. And I'm like, and but you've never made anything.
I know.
What are you doing?
Too much. And that's, yes. I mean, A lot of the like quote unquote teaching I do during the workshop is just basically saying, like, okay, that's a great idea, but like, what's one part of that idea? How can we make that smaller and explore that? And it's just, a lot of it is just about trimming it down. And I do a lot of trimming down when I teach full classes too, and we have week-long projects, because I think it's our natural inclination to be like, these are all the things I can do. And then you zoom forward, you know, 45 minutes, and you're just like lying in the fetal position because you're like, there's so many things that I can do. And it's just, I feel like, kind of like, again, like the container of a zine is a great way to start stripping down to the core of an idea, like that initial thing that you want to explore. And then if you like finish that, then you can build upon it. I always say they're good proof of concepts, you know?
Like, absolutely.
So
the first kid's book I did started when I thought, oh, I want to make a kid's book, but I'm so overwhelmed with that idea that I thought, I'll make it a zine. It'll be a kid's zine.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I started making it, it just started to flow. And it takes all the pressure off, which is super essential.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think even more so, like within like the zine workshops too, it's like, what other additional pressure is like, okay, I'm not even going to use the computer. I'm just going to strip down to the materials. And it's and I think that that's kind of like, if you go into it knowing that it's going to be kind of handmade, that it's going to be pretty like DIY, that also takes the pressure off too.
Man, that's so good. So one thing I want to go back to, is this idea of, you're in this place where you're excited about what your friends are doing. You're don't really know what you're doing. And I know that, I'm getting ahead of myself. Hold on. Here's what I want to say. I feel like the process of becoming a creative person, like the whole idea of going viral, the whole, like, you know, you dip your toe in, and if it's meant to be, then the fairy godmother of going viral will bless you, and it'll just, your career will just explode if it's meant to be. And I think that, like, even the idea of, the other thing I see all the time is like, these kids go to school for 4 years, and the problem is they cost so much money there's incredible pressure to figure it out.
Yep.
And yet, finding the first whole leg of your race, let's say your entire life, the first third of your life is about discovery. And if
so
you don't
much.
Give that space, but you, because you can't became an illustrator on accident, right?
I did. And I even remember I've been doing freelance illustration for, let me think, maybe like 10 years now.
Mm.
And so, I mean, I'm going to be 40 this year. So it wasn't really until, thank
That's
you.
Awesome.
But I like, even going back, like I remember when I was in college and I had started kind of like organizing these events, and I was, you know, making these zines and like finding different people. Basically, I was like, you know, just trying to convince people to share what it is that they were doing.
Yeah.
I was like feeling really good about like this being what I do, you know. But I remember going to Denny's, late night Denny's, with my friend Will, who was this really amazing theater student. Like, he was just like, he was probably, I always really looked up to him. I thought he was like one of the most creative people that I knew. I thought he was just so cool.
Yeah.
And we were sitting there, it was like probably 2 in the morning at Denny's.
I used to do these late night Denny's.
I love it. It was so good. So good. And
lots
we were
of smoke
there.
Even at the time. So, it was a totally
was
different
super,
vibe.
But... super smoky. Yeah. Will would be sitting there chain smoking.
I was. I used to smoke, actually.
Yeah.
Pulling packs and packs and coffee. And there were times where I would leave there feeling so terribly sick.
Like, oh, so sick. So sick.
But this was magical world at the time.
Magical. Like, yeah. Like when you would still have the ability to stay up until like 4 in the morning, still have a normal day the next day, you know? Yeah. But so I love going to Denny's, and I loved going to late night Denny's. And I was like, oh good, I'm going to hang out with my friend Will, who's like the coolest person in the universe. And we were talking, and he was, you know, he says, Kate, but like, you, what do? You don't really do anything creative. And I was just like,
did it like pierce your soul?
It did. It did. Because I was like,
oh my gosh.
Like, I was like, you're right. I just basically have surrounded myself with all of these people that do all these things that I
and
think
you
are
felt like you were in it. You were doing your creative stuff. Yeah. That's,
but then,
oh,
and
man,
so
that's
it
crazy.
Was, yeah. And so, and that always like stuck with me. It always stuck with me. And, I guess like, I don't know. I don't know what the point of that story was,
that's
but it was
the
just
call
like
to adventure. That was like, was that you? Like, I need to find something. Is that what you thought?
Well, yeah, but then it was like I kind of was also like, but I thought what I was doing,
was
like,
creative.
And it was also, I think it was just such an indication too that how people are so easily like swayed by what other people like think of them.
Yes.
Too,
oh, you absolutely.
Know? And
like
where
you were totally feeling fantastic, and like in an instant were deflated by the whole
totally.
Thing. Yeah.
And I was like, but you're right, I don't like my own writing, and I don't like my own like work that I'm making, and I didn't have the perspective to see like what that I was doing was actually a creative act.
Yeah. Did that subconsciously though start you on trying to find your thing?
I think subconsciously it just frustrated me even more.
Right.
You know, like I think that's what it was. But, and again, like, I think that was also a really good picture of how I saw myself when I was in undergrad too, where I was a supporter, a cheerleader, an advocate. Mm-hmm. And I think right now I still see myself as a supporter, a cheerleader, and an advocate, but I also like along the way, again, like that whole process of discovery, it takes a while to figure out the type of work that you want to be making too. But I think,
absolutely.
I don't know.
But do you think, here's another question, and I don't want to derail it too much because I have more questions about that. But as a tangent, do you think that you're a supporter, advocate, cheerleader in your illustration? Do you think you just use illustration as a tool to do that ever?
Like, what do you mean?
Like, I just wonder, like, you know, you're this idea of this essence of cheering people on and rallying people, getting people excited, whatever it is you would call that essence of what you're doing. Do you ever do that through the medium of illustration?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if I ever do it purposely.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe if people were to look at my work and maybe if they felt like, you know, rallied by it, that's great. But I don't think I ever consciously, I don't know, I kind of see it separate. Like,
this is weird though, because I think that you do, because I think about a lot of times, especially when you're like writing notes by the work, like there's always so much energy in every thing that you do.
You.
And then also, like, I just thought of this, like the whole resonance of Sister Creta Kent's Power Up thing.
Uh-huh.
Like that is very much the cheerleading energy too, where you're like, you know, it's happening through the work. You know
what
I mean?
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I guess maybe that happens subconsciously.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. Yeah. Anyway, I guess I have this like weird theory that we have, like, I'm not going to go super into it. All right. I'll cut it short. I was just saying that I just have a feeling that like, there's an essence that is like bursting through us, and that I think we get so bogged down in that like what it actually ends up being or what the label of it is, and it ends up bursting through with that whatever we're making, and there are like different things that you can make that harness it better than others. Anyway, sorry, I'm going off.
No, I definitely agree with that. I agree with that, where it's just kind of like, it's just built into your work without you even like trying.
And but you're doing that thing with all those people. I feel like you were probably sitting in that flow, energy, that stuff that you were, that is whatever it is you do. And because it didn't have like a clear container or label, that your friend was like, what is it you're doing?
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, again, like, I feel like the worst question to ask anyone is like, well, what is it that you do? You know, like, it's, and again, I think that goes all the way back. It's so hard to be able, like, I want to put you into this container, or I want to have this easy label to put on you, you know? And I think that's really dangerous. And I always see, whenever I see different people, when they're asked that question, like, you can just kind of see it in their face, if, you know, like, just seizing up. I think it's always such a horrible thing, especially to ask any student, you know, so what are you going to do next?
Yes.
And what's next for you? And it's just, and it's so paralyzing. Like, there's so many different ways that you could get basically whatever that answer is that you're looking for, instead of being like, well, what do you do?
And for me, it's like, I feel like as I've moved more out of that stage of discovery, there are like containers, words, things that I actually serve a decent purpose for explaining to people what I do, what my value is, what I think my special powers are. I do think there's like a time where it starts to be helpful to articulate stuff, but that is my whole point about the first phase being so necessary to just mess around.
And that was what I was going to ask you.
It's like, what did it look like to get to illustration? Because I know you did like photography project, all kinds of different stuff.
I was letting myself mess around, and because I wasn't letting myself mess around, I was actually making myself kind of ill. Yes. Like, because I worked as a graphic designer for a gift company in Omaha, Nebraska. Mm. And I really, like, it was great. I learned a lot from it. But I think that very typical thing of, like, your first design job where you were super exhausted after you got home and you didn't know, like, you had all these projects that you wanted to do, but you didn't really know how to structure them or how to start them, because number one, you were just so freaking tired from like expelling so much energy during the day that like being able to even try to think of what you were going to do in your free time at night just made you want to eat a bunch of ice cream and go to bed, basically, you know,
and watch The Office. And that's something I talk to students a lot about. It's like, if they want to go get full-time employment and that is like the goal long term, then that's fine. But I've encouraged lots of people when they're first getting out, especially illustrators, like, if you get a pseudo creative job and it zaps your creativity during the day, like, going home and making a bunch of stuff might be out of the question. I actually did that same thing where I had a graphic design job for 9 months, quit, did a little freelancing, had to get another job. And I had an opportunity to go back and do a graphic design thing. And instead I went into social work part-time.
I love that.
And I did that, and it massively inspired my creativity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So absolutely. Good. Well, I mean, I really think the best thing that I did was, I mean, I worked for a couple of years after school, and then I went to grad school, where my job was to mess around and to think. And so, like, because I was in that zone of where, like, this is my job, I always take my jobs very seriously.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing. But I still didn't draw when I was in grad school. I didn't do any drawing at all, really. Mm-hmm. But I did figure out a framework for working,
which was massive. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is massive. And
these are your projects.
Yeah. And I did a lot of photography work, but it all, again, like, it had, I figured out my framework. I figured out my rule system. I figured out my workflow. I figured out, like, what motivates me, what doesn't motivate me. I feel like all of those things were so, so, so very important, to have figured out and to have had that time to figure it out. And that's like that whole kind of like framework for working, I've still carried over so many years later too. But I think to the point where I actually got to drawing was that whole process of just making piles of work, and one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And it was just through, I started this project where I drew all of my credit card statements I was going to draw them until they were paid off.
Yeah.
And I picked drawing not because I love drawing. I picked drawing because I saw it as a form of punishment. And so, but like through that process of
the universe is so twisted.
I know, it's so, yeah. Oh, and this was that project started several years after I was done with grad school. But through just the power of repetition and sticking to a schedule and just, again, just doing it over and over again, something that I originally like saw as a form of punishment turned into something that I saw as meditative. Mm. I started taking pleasure in making marks and lines and drawing typography, and that project led to me developing another project where I would draw something other than my dumb credit card statements. That's where my daily purchase drawing project.
Obsessive consumption. Yeah.
Well, and before, prior to my credit card statement project, I had started obsessive consumption, but it was through photo documentation and putting things online. And then the What Did You Buy Today project is the daily drawing project. And that started in 2006. Mm. And then that's where I drew something that I purchased every day for, it was 8 years. It ended in 2014. But by the time, like, on the other side of that project, I was fully into illustration land.
Yeah. and this is, you said something really interesting. I saw a talk, I think it was on 99U, and I can't remember who it was, but they talk about, instead of thinking about your passion, trying to learn something that you get really good at, because when you're really good at something, you start to get passionate about it.
Yeah.
It's like you're learning, the more you kind of got into drawing and you've learned some ways in and ways that you enjoyed and your own mark making and all of that, the more time and energy you spent in there, the more enjoyable it became, and it became like a passion. So I think that
absolutely
is really interesting.
Absolutely. And it was just, it's now it's something that I do every day, and I have done it every day for years and years and years now. And it's to the point where it's like, if I don't actually make something every day, I get really crabby.
Yes. Oh man, I totally agree with that. I also think that must be something to do with the fact that I think brain states, like scientifically speaking, your brain state between meditation and then working on creative work is very similar. And I think you actually are happier as a person if you're making stuff on a regular basis.
Yes.
That's been definitely true for me.
Well, and it's also too, it's like, again, like I love being around people. I love but it's also, it's like, I need to also have that hour or so at my desk where I'm not talking to anyone and I am making work that's just for me and not for anyone else. And it's just like, again, I think I've gotten into this habit of actually having this like 45 minutes to an hour every day of just like straight up just meditating through drawing.
Yes. It's so powerful. And back to like you talking about just, you're describing this process of discovery through playing through a bunch of different mediums. And that's one of my big concern about the massive dollar amount attached to higher education and creativity. A big thing for me is that when something is that expensive, there's so much pressure and you can't play, you know, as soon as someone is telling you to play, like my kids, you know, when they're like when they get into play and I hear them, they're like little chattering noises and I can tell they're like pretending and all that. If I was like, anytime I'm like, why don't you go play with your Lego? They're like, no, anything but that. it has to happen in this, in a way where there's the pressure's off. And I think I think you need about a decade of messing around with a bunch of stuff, getting good at some stuff. And it's like, but if that comes with a giant price tag, it's really hard to strike that balance. And I'm not saying I have an answer for it. I don't necessarily,
no.
but But yeah, like it for you, it was essential to be because you did photography. You made, I
I
mean, you
did.
started making these zines and publishing these zines for other people. You did photography. You started doing the illustration thing, and it
Yeah.
was just through all of that play
It
that
was
something started to happen.
so much different play in so many different ways of kind of making and exploring. And I think it's interesting. I never really thought of this too much, but I mean, I always have a tendency to put so much pressure on myself, but my undergraduate was a work study program, so I didn't pay for it. It
Oh
was
man, interesting.
we worked 15 hours a week. Everyone who went to the school had to qualify for financial aid and like a Pell Grant and stuff like that. So the government was essentially paying the school for all the kids that were there, and then we worked 15 to 20 hours a week on campus in all of the places. And so I graduated from undergrad with no debt. And then I basically the way that I chose my grad school was not like, oh, what's the most prestigious school for me to go to? It was like, okay, who's going to pay me to go to grad school? I can't afford this, because at that time, you know, I've been working for a couple years, and I'm not going to ask my parents to pay for grad school. I'm a grown ass adult, you know. That's not what I
It's not
do.
an option.
And so I'm like, this is something that I'm going to be paying for. And I had applied to a bunch of different schools, and I got into other schools. But then when the reality came in, I was like, this is really expensive. And I'm like, I can't do this. And then because I was living in Nebraska, I received you know, in-state tuition. And then because I just threw other things, I got scholarships. And then I was also like, I had never even thought about teaching until I was awarded a teaching assistantship. So I was actually being paid to be I taught a lot of classes when I was at Nebraska, but which was great, because at that point I didn't go to school because I wanted to teach. I w went to school because I wanted to have this time. But through that, I actually like, hey, I actually really like teaching. This is crazy. So I left grad school with not any debt either. So I feel really like, I mean, I had debt in other areas, but it wasn't from school.
Man, but I feel like again, more of your essence is shining because I feel like you have this reoccurring thing where you're taking this pragmatic approach to creating space for creativity to happen. And I think, gosh, like that is so essential. And I think so many creative people, either through a chip on their shoulder about prestige or whatever it's supposed to be,
It
you
doesn't,
know,
yeah.
this idealism, right? Where I feel like through you're approaching it like create the space, the literal space
Exactly.
to create, to have creativity, create a lifestyle, make, you
Yep.
know, make decisions that allow space for creativity to happen. And you took a pragmatic approach to all that.
And I think it's not waiting for these things to happen. It's like being like, okay, this isn't going to happen until like I try to make this happen. And again, I think that goes back into taking ownership over, you know, your education, taking ownership over the things that you want to see happening. Again, making that space into a place, making it be the place that you want to be, through engaging the people that are around you, through coming up with different ideas. I mean, it takes a lot of work, but a lot of that work is really, really pays off, and it comes back to you in such bigger ways too,
Oh
you
man.
know? And
Oh, go
it's
ahead.
just it does. It's like you got to put a lot of effort into it, and then the rewards are just, they're tremendous, you know? You can't wait for that shit to happen.
No. That exact thing, like you can't wait for stuff to happen to you.
No.
And I, this is for me, like because I've spent so much energy in the past couple of years doing the podcast, invested in helping other people be creative. I feel like there's been a lot of like existential questions of is creativity important really? And to me, you're describing the essence of why creativity, like I think the definition of creativity is happening to your life rather than it happening to you.
Exactly,
Oh, it's
exactly.
so good.
And
Oh, I get too excited about
no,
it.
I do too.
Oh,
I
man.
love it. I absolutely love it. And I, again, like one of the things that I love about teaching so much is that it's so much more than just what happens in the classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about being engaged with the environment that you're in. It's being engaged with the people that you're taking those classes with. It's about the things that can happen outside of the classroom. And yeah. I'm such an advocate for, you know, workshops and field trips and lecture series and just like events to be happening, because that might take more energy to make happen, but it makes the in-classroom experience so much more exciting too. Like it it all works together. And it just, I don't know. That's what makes me really excited.
And I feel like you know, as a teacher, you know, you're describing the billions of ways that you can switch someone on to what they need to be doing, or the way they need to be thinking, or, you know, being playful or happening to their life, making stuff happen. And I feel like you're creating all of these different possible opportunities. Like maybe it's the event that's going to do it. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And you're just hitting it from all these different angles until, you know, the maximum amount of the group is starting to get it. And that is just magical.
No, you're totally right. You're totally right. And I think about whenever we do organize a lecture series here at school, it's like, I'm not thinking that every single person that I bring in is going to connect with every single student. My hope would be that just one of those people connects for one of those students in different ways, you know? It's like, because it's just, again, it's about just like showing like all of the different things and the different ways that you can be creative and you can make things. And if you can connect and you can hit with just one of that, like that's where things start to grow and blossom and move from like one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. That's when the, like kind of the snowball can start.
Yes.
But it takes a while to figure out how that effect can start.
Yes.
So
I do think it's like you're like pushing them up a hill until they get that inflection point, and all of a sudden the momentum is like,
oh man.
And
and then once that momentum hits, you're just like, watch out. Whoa, this is so awesome. It's so good.
Man, that's like the teacher's heart.
So good.
Oh man. Okay, I've stolen so many minutes of your time, and
I love talking to you, Andy.
Oh man, I love talking to you too. When you know what? I had a so you were a guest in my MFBA class last semester.
So much fun. Those kids are
amazing.
So great.
Dude, they're awesome. And they were chuckling at us afterwards. They were saying that you guys were like a crazy pep fest of energy. And I do think, we're definitely sharpen each other in that way. And
I love it.
Yeah, super excited. All right, okay. I'm going to let you go.
Thank you, Andy,
Thank you so much for doing this. This is like one of the best conversations I've had in so many days of my lonely freelance life. So thank
me
you.
Me too. All okay. Right.
Thanks.
I'll talk with you later.
Yep. See ya.
Bye, Andy.
Seriously, Kate, if you're listening to this, thank you so much for sharing so many awesome things with the whole pepperoni crew. I feel like there's just this real kindred spirit here with the pep talk and Kate, and I'm sure you will be seeing more collaborations and involvement from her over the next couple years. Go follow Kate on Instagram and go check out her work. You will not be disappointed. I think it's just at Kate Bingham & Burt. Go check it out. She's doing really, really interesting things, and she will surely brighten your day and bring lots of pep to your step. Again, thank you, Kate. You're such an awesome person. Okay, that wraps it up. Another episode of the podcast in the bag. Woo! Goodness gracious. Thanks for listening, guys. I love you guys so much. And thanks for all the love and support. Stay tuned for the next episode. Big thanks to our syndicate, Illustration Age. You can find the show at illustrationage.com/creativepeptalk. Big smashing shout out to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme tunes. They got a new album coming out in March. from the tracks they've released so far, I am so freaking pumped. Man, and they're going on tour. Go check that out. The band is Why. Also, big shout out to Nate Utesh and the band Metavari for all the other tunes. They make this podcast sound beautiful. He has a new EP out, so go check that out. Thank you guys so much. Do whatever it takes to keep going. Make stuff. Man, honestly, one creative principle that is just absolutely true is that the more you make, the better you get. And for me, one of the core ways that I keep making stuff every day is that I just stay interested, stay excited, stay pepped in my step, and just keep moving. So do whatever it takes, guys, to stay pepped up.